from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum in our opening hour this morning, California Governor Jerry Brown has proposed shifting juvenile justice away from what remains under the control of the state to the counties. And the governor says it will save the state $250 million. What best serves the population of felony convicted youth? Is it better to have them incarcerated in county and state institutions or to rely entirely on the counties? We'll hear from both sides. Forum is next. After this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum. In this morning's opening hour, we focus on the recent proposal by Governor Jerry Brown to eliminate the division in California of juvenile justice, so that responsibility for young offenders will entirely be with counties. Those who believe the state facilities are outdated are especially welcoming of this proposal, while opponents argue that counties are ill-equipped to handle any expanded role. We take up the debate in this hour, and before we meet those who represent both sides of that debate, Michael Montgomery, our own KQED reporter who has been covering this for KQED Radio News and California Watch, is here with us in studio. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning.
Let's just break this down for listeners. Right now, we've got the state holding roughly how many juveniles?
Around 1,300. And it's worth pointing out that that is down from around 10,000 youth offenders who were in state facilities in the mid-90s.
So that's a result of a lawsuit back in 2004, mainly?
In part, and there's also been already an ongoing shift of moving young offenders to county facilities. That's a process that's been underway. But there was a major lawsuit that essentially ended what was known as the California Youth Authority and forced it to transform into something different. And since then, there's been a significant reduction in the number of offenders in those facilities.
Yeah, there's been a long history going back to the California Youth Authority in terms of the controversy. But the notion that the governor has here is that $250 million can be saved simply by shifting everything to the counties. And yet, right now, those who are in the state are the most violent offenders. Is that not correct?
That is correct. And again, there's only about 1,300 of them, which is rather remarkable given how large this state is. But these are the most difficult cases, young offenders convicted for violent offenses. And one of the questions, obviously, that will be explored is, are the counties or are county facilities capable of handling some of these really, really difficult cases?
Another one of the big questions seems to be, if it all goes to the counties, are prosecutors going to be more apt to try these juveniles as adults?
Right.
And send them to prison.
There is concern that in a sort of indirect way, youthful offenders may be more likely to end up in adult facilities. If there's no state youth prisons, will local prosecutors think, well, I can't just send this guy to a local county facility. We have to have some larger, tougher a place where we would be sending a signal that we're tough on some of these kinds of crimes. So there is something of a concern about that.
And there's also concern about the fact that in the 58 California counties, there's a whole range of what the counties have to offer in the way of, frankly, just the institutions that we're talking about here.
Well, there's pluses and minuses to that. I mean, there is a widespread belief that a lot of these offenders are better off in small facilities. Do you want more small facilities where you can do kind of experimentation that I think we'll hear about today? However, you also want certain standards, certain consistency, and there is a question whether a lot of the poorer counties can deliver that kind of consistent treatment and care.
But right now we have the vast majority in county facilities. Roughly how many?
Around 13,000. Again, that's down from 20,000 in the mid-90s. And just one last point. There is some good news in all this. I mean, there are fewer young people in facilities, whether they're county or state. And presumably that's good for a lot of these people and their families.
It means the crime rates are lower, too.
Absolutely. That's a big factor.
Michael, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Michael Montgomery is reporter with KQED Radio News and California Watch. Here with us in studio, we have Barry Crisberg, who is a research and policy director at UC Berkeley Law School. He was appointed by the legislature to serve on the California Blue Ribbon Commission on Inmate Population Management and has served on almost all major statewide task forces, including California corrections issues over the past 20 years. And Barry Crisberg, good to have you back on Forum. Good morning.
Good morning.
Also have with us Dan McAleer, who is executive director and co-founder of the Center on Juvenile and Criminal Justice. He's also with us here in studio this morning. Dan, good to have you back as well.
Good morning.
Morning to you. Let me begin, Barry Crisberg, with you. If things are kept at the county level, I guess a good deal of your concern is there will be fewer options for rehabilitation. Not necessarily that rehabilitation is moving full steam ahead as many would like it to, but there would, the options would dwindle as you see it?
Yes, I think there's a really danger of that, because we have to keep focused on the fact that over the last 10 years, we've diverted 90% of the former population of California state juvenile facilities. We've already gotten them out. So now we do have this residual group. And because of the offenses they've committed, because these are some of the most troubled youth in terms of mental health challenges, my concern is that the counties really are not geared up to manage these youth, and that they'll probably find their way to the sort of deepest end of the detention centers, where programming education is going to be far more limited than what they're getting now.
What are they getting in the state? Are they getting what they need there?
Things can always get better. But I would have to say I was appointed by Attorney General Bill Lockyer to conduct an investigation of the Youth Authority in 2003. And what we found then was horrible. And the conditions were so horrible. Kids in cages, kids locked up forever for 23, 24 hours a day, that immediately Governor Schwarzenegger decided he was going to sign a consent decree, wasn't going to refute the litigation. Since that time, however, there's been substantial improvement in many areas. For example, when I started the investigation, there was an average of 500 to 600 youth who were locked in their cells 23 hours a day, got 1 hour of exercise. That number today is lower than 30. So in some areas, there's less use of isolation. There's less use of chemical and physical restraints. Back then, the education program was non-existent. Now these youth are getting state-prescribed educational hours and curriculum. So while things can get better and we can talk about areas of improvement, people need to understand that there've been the lawsuit has contributed to a major change in conditions for kids.
The lawsuit that I mentioned before out of Alameda County in 2004 about
That's
safety
correct.
And security in these state institutions not being up to par.
Yeah, we call this the Farrell suit. Yeah, but there's no question that the Farrell consent decree contributed to improvements in health care, education, mental health services, particularly safety and security issues. And again, things can get better, but it's a long way since 2003.
Well, there are generally, Dan McAleer, let's bring you into this, generally fewer health care services on the county level, at least from what I understand. And the counties really have come under serious criticism, too, in terms of accountability and standards.
Well, actually, Michael, that's not necessarily true. The counties actually have greater access to a broader array of services than the state could ever have. The counties have access to state funding, federal funding. For example, let me give you in the area of mental health services, counties have access to federal Medicaid funding, which not all the county juvenile justice systems have taken advantage of in the past. But for example, here in San Francisco, what we did in the past 2 years, we've increased the budget for the San Francisco Juvenile Probation Department by nearly $1 million simply by accessing federal funding streams that have been available for more than 25 years, but systems haven't taken advantage of it. That is something that could greatly augment the quality of services at the county level to a degree that the state could never match, even in its best days.
And frankly, the state is not going to match it.
And this is an important
point. Really for the counties, is there?
Look, and I want to say, Barry and I have worked together off and on for the past 25 years, and there's very few things we disagree on. And I'm not saying that we disagree so much on the issue of, who controls juvenile justice. But, we have to start with this from a basic premise. What in the field of corrections, what is the best and most effective way to deliver the most effective services in the most efficient manner? And there's a general tenet in the corrections field that you deliver the services at the point close in the area of juvenile justice at the point closest to the community and neighborhood where the kid comes from. And ideally, you have those services provided by one entity or one, you know, in this case, one system or probation system that oversees the delivery of all services. So it's all under one roof. Right now, we've got a fragmented system. We've got a dual system. We have a state-run system and we have a county-based system. And in many ways, having that dual system historically.
And by the way, I think California is the only state that does have that division. Is that not
there,
true?
No,
are there others?
There are other states. But
well, it certainly creates confusion about who's going to pay the bills.
Well, I should say what makes California unique is our history of strong county government. We have a tradition of strong county government here in California, and that's certainly true in the juvenile justice field. Most services, practically all, 99% of the kids that come into the juvenile justice system on a yearly basis are served at the county level. And so the counties do have a much broader array of options than what the state can offer. Really what we're talking about here, and I think the major issue, is what facilities should the remaining group of the 1,200 kids that remain in the state system, where should they be housed? And that is a legitimate argument. It's a legitimate consideration. But I think we have to have this discussion not kind of in the abstract or in the ideal world, but in the recognition that the state is in the midst of a $28 billion deficit. And according to the legislative analysts, those billion-dollar deficits are going to continue into the next 5 years.
But, of course, you heard Barry's argument. You're throwing the worst offenders in with – well, not – I mean, you've got kids who are in the county facilities for graffiti and for truancy and theft and things like that. You have some pretty hardcore violent criminals in this among these 1,500.
And I think that's the point we have to address. First of all, the kids who are in the Division of Juvenile Justice, yes, they tend to be the most serious offenders. But there's a huge disparity. There are 58 counties in the state of California, and you've got 58 different juvenile justice systems in terms of their approaches, their practices, their routines, their cultures. And this is a legitimate area that we need to discuss. And particularly if we're going to move into a 21st century of design and develop a 21st century juvenile justice system. So there are different county practices. And so counties historically, there's been a huge disparity of you know, who the worst kids are. So a kid who gets a Kings County or a Kern County has traditionally sent a high number of kids to the Division of Juvenile Justice, where San Francisco or Alameda County or now Santa Clara County send almost none. And so those definitions of who the worst kids are vary from county to county, and I think that's an area we need to get to.
But so do the and I guess this is an important point from your perspective, Barry Crisberg, so do the counties themselves in terms of what they offer in their facilities. I mean, there's a wide disparity. San Francisco, for example, is almost a model. And they've got Kern County, which is almost on the other end of the spectrum.
Well, that's a big concern. And there have been a number of counties, including several from the Bay Area, that have recently been sued by the prison law office, have entered into consent decrees over fundamental violations of kids' rights, fundamental denial of educational services, lack of a whole range of issues. One of the things I want to disagree with Dan over, Dan is talking about accessing federal dollars to pay for health care, which he's been very successful doing in San Francisco. But we run up against something called the inmate exception, which means a lot of these federal dollars are not available if somebody is incarcerated in a secure facility. So we're talking about a group that I would say, based on their offenses and their background, are unlikely to be placed in the community. There may be some, and I think that we ought to explore that. But I just don't see a youth who's charged with murder at age 15, maybe has a long history of prior offenses, going into probation. And again, what the listeners need to understand is we've already taken 90% of the kids out of the system, sent them to the counties, and that's been very successful. So, yes, the counties have risen to the occasion, but now we're really talking about a difficult group.
Do we need maybe a new facility? Dan, I want to get your response, obviously, but do we need some kind of new facility? I mean, there's whatever its successes or failures are, Pelican Bay tends to be a place where a lot of these kind of violent offenders of the adult population can be. Do we need something like that in terms of this youth population?
I don't think we need that at all. In fact, California tried to run facilities like that, and they were a disaster. I continue to think that the model we ought to look at is the model of the Missouri Division of Youth Services, which has now been recognized nationally for its positive results, and in fact has been replicated in Santa Clara County. Santa Clara has taken their camp and ranch and converted it over to this Missouri approach, and they're getting very good results.
What else are they doing, for example, that people should know about in Santa Clara or in Missouri?
Well, the key to that model is, first of all, facilities have to be very small. There's not a facility bigger than 50 beds in the state of Missouri. Secondly, they are close to where the kids live, so they have access to family visitation, et cetera. And the third thing is that they treat the youth decently. If you go to a Missouri facility, it looks like a college dormitory. If you go to a current California youth authority, it looks like a prison. And so if you put young people, or any of us for that matter, in a setting which looks and smells and sounds like a prison, we start acting like inmates.
Well, in the state facilities, of course, gang activity and gang affiliation is very strong, profoundly strong. Has that been diminished in these kind of experimental or different paradigm like you're talking about, Missouri, Santa Clara?
Well, in Santa Clara, the research we did showed that within 1 year, the number of fights and incidents and violence went down by half.
That's significant, yeah.
Very significant. And now, as they're trying to figure out, reentry services, those results will probably get better. Missouri is posting the best recidivism rates in the country, and even if you compare apples and apples, I mean, admittedly, Missouri does lock up kids who are less serious than this population in California. But if you just compare the violent offenders in both places, there's no question that the results are better.
Let me go back to Dan Meckler. What about the inmate exception, which you heard Barry Crisberg mention?
Well, actually, there are counties that are using that are accessing these federal funds. They are accessible to kids in the juvenile justice system. Sometimes they're not always available to kids who are in institutions, but they are available once they come out. I know that because we're doing that. But there's also Humboldt County, for example, established has a locked facility. It's a regional facility that they provide mental health services for kids, not just from Humboldt County, but also some of the surrounding counties. And they did find a way through negotiations with the state and the applying for federal waivers that allows them to access those federal funds so they can provide services in the facility, and not only provide the services within the facility, but even more importantly, continue to provide those services once those kids come out and they return to their communities, and more importantly, when they return to their families. Because one of the historic limitations and problems within youth corrections is that we tend to work with the kid in isolation. This is the historic one of the historic problems with the old California Youth Authority, now the Division of Juvenile Justice, is that we remove a kid from their community. We isolate them in a facility, a rundown, dilapidated, violent facility hundreds of miles from where they come from, leave them there for sometimes up to 36 months or longer, and then return them to the community with very few support services, very little follow-up, other than mainly surveillance and apprehension if the kid should violate a condition of their release, and then return them to the facility. It's never worked. It didn't work in the 1890s when we started doing this, and it doesn't work in the 21st century.
Speaking of the 1890s, I mean, isn't it really the core of your argument that the state institutions are relics of the 19th century and that the state system as it presently exists is not sustainable?
Well, I think I learned that from Barry. It was the We have a training.
They call them gladiator schools, don't they?
Well, you know, and if you go back on the history of what was the California Youth Authority, the Division of Juvenile Justice, you know, we have one of the institutions that's currently operating that is slated for closure is the Preston Youth Correctional Facility. That was opened in 1894. It was based on the reform school model of the day, where you removed the kid from the corruption of their urban environment, placed them into some pristine rural setting where they could be housed for a period of time, where they would be housed for a period of time, fixed, and then sent on their way, and hopefully they would sin no more. Well, it didn't work in the 1890s, and it's not working today.
Well, let's ask your mentor on this, Barry Crisberg. Really, Barry, I need to ask you also, can the counties really take on greater numbers? I mean, 1,500 or whatever it is still can be quite significant.
I think there's a big concern about that, particularly because as I read the governor's budget, there is no money for the counties to do this. There's no resources. When we transferred the nonviolent offenders to the counties, we gave the counties collectively almost $100 million to manage these kids in local programming. This budget is just simply save money. There is no money really to pay for this.
It's a lot of money, though. It's close to $250 million, as we've said before.
Well, that's the savings from the state budget, but that is not money that's going to show up in the budgets of probation departments or community agencies. So we got to be careful. Yes, this will cut the state deficit, but there's no evidence that anyone's going to get this money at the local level. But, you know, I want to come back to what Dan has said. I don't think there's a serious dispute that the old, congregate training school model has failed. Mm-hmm. And what we're seeing across the country is virtually every state is abandoning it. Every major state is closing down these facilities. I'm working in New York now where there's less than 700 kids in state facilities in New York State. Michigan, Ohio, all these states are closing facilities, moving kids closer to home, and really emphasizing home-based care. What we still, I believe, have to figure out is for these youth who are not going to easily go into those programs because people are not going to want them or they bring a lot of issues, we need to figure out what's going to work. Now, years ago, there was a great book that John Huebner of the San Jose Merck wrote called Last Chance in Texas, where he talked about a model program for violent offenders in Texas that was well-researched and was an excellent program. I think we need to be looking for programs like that. The issue for me is there's no inherent reason which unit of government could run good programs. I just think that if you have a state that only focuses on serious offenders, there's a chance of getting some good programming going. Otherwise, I see these kids as being housed in some remote corner of a juvenile hall someplace. And I think the listeners have to understand that the juvenile halls in California may physically look better because we spent a lot of money on building new ones, but they have almost no program space. They have minimal education programs. They weren't designed to provide treatment. They were designed to just hold kids for very short periods of time till the trials came.
Well, they're warehouses, basically. I get a response to you, David. We're coming up on a break, and I want to get our listeners involved in this. What do you think? I think this all should go to the counties, or is it maybe throwing out a certain kind of whatever with the bathwater? We would like to hear from you, and in fact, if you have some strong opinions on this, by all means, give us a call. Or if you have questions or comments of any nature, our toll-free number is available. It's 866-733-6786. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. A new proposal by Governor Jerry Brown is seeking to eliminate the state's Division of Juvenile Justice and shift the responsibility of young offenders to the counties. And those who find the state facilities outdated are certainly welcoming this proposal, but others are saying the counties aren't equipped to handle such an expanded role. We're hearing from both sides of the debate with Barry Crisberg and Dan McAleer, and this may be the first time in many decades that they've disagreed on something. Barry Crisberg, again, is research and policy director over at UC Berkeley Law School, and Dan McAleer, executive director and co-founder of the Center on Juvenile and Criminal Justice. We also had an opportunity at the beginning of this hour to talk to our own Michael Montgomery, reporter for KQED Radio News and California Watch, and you have an opportunity to put in your two cents or to go on record here and let us know what your thoughts are on this controversial issue. We welcome your phone calls or emails or postings on our website. Again, the toll-free number 866-733-6786, the email address forum@kqed.org, and our website kqed.org/forum, and simply click on this segment. I'm going to go to your calls and emails here, but I want to hear first from Dan McAleer, who had a response to what Barry Crisberg said before we went to that break, Dan.
Well, I would just like to say again, the reality we're facing here, again, is the state is looking at a $28 billion deficit. There's no new money that's going to be available, whether it's at the state level or the county level. If the future rests in the county and county juvenile justice systems, and I believe it does, then we've got to emphasize the infusing the counties with resources when they come available. We can no longer afford to operate dual systems. That's one. Two, the counties, while the state has struggled to emerge from this feral lawsuit and frankly has not done a very good job by Barry's own analysis, the counties have been seeds of innovation. You see some of the best practices in the country in some of the counties here in California. I agree with Barry. Some of the counties are doing a dismal job. But at the same time, we also have counties that are as good as any systems in the country. Santa Cruz is often pointed to, and I've been there. They have an extraordinary chief probation officer, Scott McDonald, who frankly I think runs the best juvenile justice system in the country. I think what San Francisco has done serves as a model for any large city jurisdiction anywhere in the country. We send fewer kids to state institutions than any comparable jurisdiction of its size in the country. Santa Clara County that Barry mentioned is they went from having one of the highest rates of commitments to state institutions just, 15 to 20 years ago to one of the lowest. And they did it under the leadership of Sheila Mitchell, the current chief probation officer, again, who is instituting some extraordinary state-of-the-art practices. So the innovation is happening at the county level. The challenge as we move into the future is to bring those innovations statewide. And I do believe there is a state role for that. Not necessarily in running institutions, but ensuring that there is some degree of uniformity between the counties so you don't have counties that slack off while other counties are doing everything they can to develop the kinds of models that we can all be proud of.
All right. Let us bring in our listeners and find out what they have to say about all this. Thomas, you're first up. Good morning.
Good morning. My comment is that we can't really talk about reforms until we decide who's going to do what. I was part of a team that helped certify a pre-apprenticeship program at Hughes Ranch a couple of years ago for the building trades. We were trying to get youth out of the system, out of the endless cycle of, like what one of your guests was talking about, take them out, put them in a remote location, keep them incarcerated for a few years, and then put them back in the exact same neighborhoods where they came out of. And we were trying to break the cycle. We've got to put a tremendous amount of effort and time into this thing. Got it certified. It was one of the first programs in the country, as far as I know. And yet, because of budget cuts, there isn't even a boys' ranch anymore. So really, we really need to establish, I don't care if it's the counties or the states that run it, somebody make up their mind, establish the funding for it, and stop arguing about it and kicking a can down the road. We need to take this seriously because the youth is the future of our country. And unless we're dealing with it seriously, we're not going to get anywhere.
Well, this question about who is administering, Dan McAleer, you're nodding your head vigorously. I mean,
well, it actually goes. I mean, we are going to have to make a choice, I think. I think the budgetary necessity is going to dictate that. the counties, the advantages of the counties, again, going back to what I said earlier, and this is just basic good corrections practice, is you want to have your services administered. Ideally, you want your services administered by one entity. So there is a degree of continuity, oversight, and coordination, and which the state cannot do. And ultimately, in a good correction system, you've got a combination of secure facilities, medium security facilities, and most importantly, a good array of coordinated community-based services. The state cannot do that. The counties can do that. Some of them do very well. Others do not. And I think that's where the challenge is.
Well, what do you think on that score, Barry Crisberger, particularly in terms of the states perhaps having a more central role?
Again, as I look across the country, I think that the trend is in the opposite direction, to provide more state control and oversight and consistent funding. The thing that troubles me about the counties is that it has taken threats of litigation and often expensive and time-consuming efforts to get the counties to provide even basic services to youth. And we're just starting to do that. If we walk away from the state system, we're basically walking away from the current legal requirements that are protecting these youth. And it will be years before we can somehow provide enough accountability for these counties.
Let me bring more of our callers on. And Ray, you're next up. Join us on Forum. Good morning.
Hi. I was wondering, I think pushing implementation down to the counties is not a bad idea. The question is, does the state still have oversight from the top? And I thought I heard somebody say it might not be possible to have oversight, but there should be oversight from the state. The state has the responsibility. The counties can take advantage of the opportunities to be effective and accountable. We have an attorney general who speaks intelligently about making decisions based on measured outcomes. This is almost unique in politics. Is there any reason to be hopeful that the implementation can push down and we can get comparability of programs, that we can get measurement of programs effectiveness at the state level, since every parent in the state should be concerned about this?
Yeah, Ray, thank you. Again, Barry Crisberger, we were talking about the whole question of implementation.
Right, and implementation is the critical issue here. But I think what the listeners need to know is California has some pretty decent regulations that cover the county facilities. However, the prison law office had to sue the state of California to enforce its own regulations. And every time someone has, and especially us advocates, have suggested, let's hold the counties accountable for what state law says they should do, we're responded with the threat, well, we'll just zero out the budget for the regulatory agency. So you'll have standards, but nobody paid to regulate them. I think leaving the counties are always going to be lobbying for laissez-faire capitalism. And that's, I think that's not in the best
interest.
The
counties do have a lot of autonomy. I mean, I'm assuming from what you said, Dan.
They do. I mean, as I said, there's that's also.
Maybe they don't have the accountability that they should have.
Well, that's also why they have been centers of innovation. I think we're in agreement that there has to be a state role. Here's perhaps the part where we might disagree. And I think history should dictate some decisions here. When the California Youth Authority was originally established in 1941, it was not for the purpose of running institutions. It was partly for the purpose of developing better techniques and improving the capacity of local counties so they wouldn't have to rely on state institutions. When things went wrong was when the California Youth Authority in 1943 under Governor Warren, because of scandals that were occurring in the state institutions, took over the management of those institutions. Once that happened, it no longer could fulfill that a dual purpose of managing institutions and then trying to apply standards to counties when they couldn't even maintain the standards in their own institutions. I think the role for the state should be a strong one. Barry and I are in full agreement on this. There needs to be a state office that has teeth, that can impose standards at the county level, that provides monitoring, evaluation, supervision, and funding. to ensure that all 58 counties are in compliance so we don't have these vast differences. But again, it goes back to my argument. We can't have dual systems. You can't have systems that the mistake we made with the California Youth Authority was that they were given the task of trying to impose standards that they themselves could not meet. So we have to have a state agency that has that mandate, isn't shouldered with the burden of running its own institutions, but is solely focused on maintaining quality at the county level. That's the way I believe we should move ahead. And the state has to provide a funding stream.
Well, doesn't also – I think, Barry Crisberg, you said that because of this division between state and county, there's a kind of gaming that goes on in terms of who pays the bills.
Absolutely. There's no question there's a gaming going on. But I want to come back to when we talk about counties, the county that pops into my head is Los Angeles, our 800-pound gorilla in so many areas. Almost half the kids come from Los Angeles County who come into the state system. Every facility in Los Angeles County is currently under a federal civil rights consent decree, and there's been almost no progress in meeting the requirements of that consent decree. In fact, recently, when the Board of Supervisors in Los Angeles appropriated some $70 million for reforms, it turned out that they couldn't even account for the money. They couldn't even find the money. So as long as you have the largest county in the state that accounts for at least half and maybe more of the youth who end up in the state system in almost total chaos, California's got a big problem. And I don't know how we walk away from a state system and just sort of close our eyes to what's going on in Los Angeles.
Well, here, by the way, I'm going to go to some emails here. Here's a listener. And if you'd like to email us, you can do so, forum@kqed.org, or you can get on the program here by calling us at 866-733-6786. Here's Tom, who writes, moving the cost from state to local governments is a shell game. It doesn't identify how we pay for the services. And another listener, Frank, says, where are the counties going to get the money to take on this new responsibility? Well, we heard from Dan on that, but he also says, what's the source of the money that the state will be saving? And again, as you pointed out, Dan, it's really primarily in the budget, and it's not any necessarily savings elsewhere.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it is a shell. Look, at the Little Hoover Commission, which is a quasi branch of state government that oversees efficiency, makes recommendations to the governor and legislature on how to better run California government. They don't always listen to them, but they do very good policy work. The legislative analysts, you know, two nonpartisan independent policy bodies, have recommended the closure of the DJJ and the movement of services back to the counties.
Again, but Department of Juvenile Justice.
Department of Juvenile Justice, Division of Juvenile Justice. But both recommendations have come with the recognition that the counties also need a funding stream to provide these new services if they're going to increase their capacity to absorb this population. Now, some counties are ready to do it, I think. Other counties are not, either because of resource poor or just simply because of, you know, sometimes just administrative or cultural issues in those particular counties.
Let me bring more of our callers on, and we'll go next to caller in Daly City, Johan. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
I actually have been working in the probation field, and I think that something that we should also remember is that it takes a lot of money and resources. I've heard that several times, you know, to help these kids. You know, for the staffing levels, for the programs that they need. And, of course, you know, we keep talking about a shell game. There's no money around. But also, I think, it's important to remember the counties are ill-equipped to deal with kids who, you know, have committed very heinous crimes like murder. What do we do with those kids? What do we do with those kids where it's difficult to give them programming? And, of course, you don't want to just put them in a juvenile hall until they reach 18 and waste time there.
Dan Mackler.
Well, depending on the seriousness of the offense, of course, a lot of those kids right now are transferred to the adult court and tried as adults. I think this is one of the issues is if we eliminate that state system, will we see more kids transferred to adults? I know Barry has an opinion on it.
Although we should mention that right now, I believe we talked about the Alameda court judgment, 85% are in compliance.
At DJJ?
Yeah.
Well, that's a...
Does that sound like an inflated figure? I don't know. That's what
well,
I
it's, it, it, they compare... What happens is that, DJJ and the staff are good staff. I think that they are, you know, doing the best they can under adverse circumstances. But that 85% is somewhat deceiving, because what they do is they take, you know, a variety, you know, 800 different areas of that they had to improve, from writing policy manuals to hiring, establishing an internship program for a chaplaincy, and they weigh them all together and they give them equal weight, and they come up with this 85%. You know, but it doesn't get to the real heart of the major changes, which is the implementation of a rehabilitative program and the construction of new facilities. It's
deceptive, as you said. Barry Crisberg, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, on the issue of compliance, I've often said that to some extent we have to take the number with a grain of salt. But it is certainly true that the state staff have embraced reform, have worked very creatively to try to implement it. And again, because we're dealing with the most comprehensive juvenile justice reform consent decree in American history, they had a lot of work to do, and they've been doing a lot of work. But there are some big remaining issues. I still believe that the state needs to come up with alternatives for the young women in the system. I don't believe they have an adequate program.
It's also a system that has always been criticized for its lack of mental health care and mental health facilities, as well as just the nature of health care in general.
Well, and I think that's right. But part of that issue has been the unwillingness on the part of the Department of Mental Health in the state of California to step in and do its share. For example, in Missouri, they don't allow mentally ill youth in the Division of Youth Services. In California, the Department of Mental Health has been unwilling to take full responsibility. So oftentimes the youth people had to do the best they could.
I'm reading about shrinks in the state institutions who wear flak jackets. I mean, that's how bad it is, and what they're up against. And I'm not talking about mental health. I'm just talking about violence in general.
That's correct.
Let me come back to another figure, though. We've been talking about revenue stream, and another element of this that's important to touch on is Governor Brown has already said that he can fund this by extending sales tax and vehicle license fees. Now, with whether or not California voters will go along, of course, is another question. But I just wanted to put that out there, because that is indeed what the governor has said. Let me get Elma on as our next caller. Elma, thanks for waiting. Join us on Forum.
Hi, my name is Elma Lones, and I work in San Francisco in the Bayview Hunters and for a treatment program that treats families with on-site treatment program for mothers and children and single fathers and children. And my question is this. What I have seen, and it's a need that we hear about quite a bit, is the lack of adolescent treatment programs. Walden House had a residential, and I guess it's Dan, you're in San Francisco, correct?
I am.
Yeah, well, then you're probably familiar with the Walden House program, and they do have an adult step-down program where they do early release. But they had to close their adolescent treatment program. And overall, you know, like, I think treating the family is the best idea, but they keep closing the programs. And then you were talking about women and young women. Like, there is no treatment programs for women under the age of 18 that are pregnant and have various criminal justice issues. So I'd like to hear your response to that, because I also know community-based programs cost a whole lot less.
I'm glad. I want to hear a response to that. Also, I was just thinking about all – when you mentioned Walden House there are these nonprofit groups that do so much with runaway youth and youth who have addiction problems and so forth. I mean, Huckleberry House, for example, who do great work, mm-hmm. but they're getting less funding. They're mm-hmm. having a harder time in these right. recessionary times. You were going to say, Dan?
Yeah, I mean, that really is the kind of the heart of the issue that we're talking about. We're they're shrinking resources statewide. So I think the issue is, do we kind of maintain this old system, this old dilapidated system that everybody agrees needs to be replaced? The facilities, by, you know, and Barry's reported on this, the facilities all need to be replaced. And so
the governor kind of finally called your bluff, didn't he?
And so, so as we move forward, you know, do we really want to invest in this old system? And, you know, my thing is, we're not going to face the challenges of the future by maintaining the problems of the past. And I really see the Division of Juvenile Justice as a relic of the past. And we need to move forward. And if the resources are shrinking, we need to, you know, invest where they're most likely to succeed. And frankly, my belief is that they're most likely to succeed if we invest in at the county level, where you have the facilities. It's not every place is ideal, but Not just do you have facilities, and this is the important difference. It's not just about institutional care. It is about what happens to these kids when they leave the institutions and they reenter the community and reenter society. That's where we need to make the investment, and that's where the state has utterly failed, and it has now for 100 years. It's time to move on.
We'll move on to another caller. Let's get you on here. Deborah, good morning.
Hi. It's so nice to be able to talk about this subject. It's so dear to me. My kids are both involved in peer court / teen court here in San Francisco, and I'm an incredible supporter for juvenile offenders that especially have committed misdemeanors or other even violent offenses, but, you know, that do not involve incredibly, you know, offenses. I feel strongly that they should be allowed to go through youth courts or call it peer courts or teen courts and be kept in school and out, basically, of the juvenile justice system, because it is clear that the moment they get in, they will never get out. And there are, you know, studies after study that talk about this. So in order to better serve the victims and the community in the discipline process, to involve all the stakeholders and participants in those programs that are based on restorative justice, I think that specifically we should use more peer court. And I would like to have an answer to that, because also it is, of course, from the standpoint of a financial standpoint, is definitely cheaper than whatever else.
Let me get a quick response to that, because we're coming up on a break here. Barry Crisberg, peer court.
I think peer court is one of a number of early interventions which I think would be helpful. And we have to figure out how to create the political will to invest in the front end, not the back end. But I still want to come back. You know, maybe it's because I go to these facilities every month and I talk to these youth and I've gotten to know them so well over the years. I just can't accept the idea that we're going to take these young persons and put them in our terrible prison system. Many of them have committed crimes when they were very young, and their brains have evolved. They've changed. Some of them were basically at the wrong place at the wrong time. They were accomplices. Others have serious mental health and addiction problems. I think nothing but cruelty will be gained from putting them in the prison system.
But I don't think anybody wants to put them in the prison system. That's not what we're talking. I think if we construct a system, improve the capacity of the counties to serve this population and other populations, then I think what will happen is we'll end up with a better juvenile justice system, one that everybody has confidence in, and we'll see less kids going into the adult system.
Well, you know, the state needs more funding, but so do we. And you're listening to Forum. I'm talking with Dan McAleer and Barry Crisberg. And this is a fundraising period for KQED Republic Radio. And for more information about how to support KQED, please go to kqed.org. I'm Michael Krasny. I think we have actually H.D. Palmer. We're going to try to get H.D. Palmer on the line to talk about funding from the governor's office, but let's get another caller on here in the meantime. And Edmundo joins us from Cupertino. Good morning.
Good morning. Appreciate the discussion. And there are very powerful points, I think, on that each of your guests makes. But my point that I wanted to raise here is that I don't think it's enough to cede to the governor or any elected official that there is no money. Because, Michael, you're going to have a series of programs, you know, talking not just about juvenile justice. You're going to there'll be a slew of programs that are going to get cut that we have to, as citizens of this society, have to lobby and get active to get the oil severance tax and a number of other sources of funding from those who have and to fund our public programs.
Well, so I'm glad you I'm glad you mentioned that, Edmundo, because we do actually have H.D. Palmer on with us now, the governor's finance guy, and we've been talking a lot about money and the dwindling resources and so forth. HD, good to have you with us. Good morning.
Always good to be back. Thanks, Michael.
Thank you. Well, we're talking about where the money's going to come from if everything is shifted to the counties. And I had mentioned that the governor talked about, extending the sales tax and the vehicle license fees and so forth. Those aren't certainly certain things are in the bag. You're pretty confident there in Sacramento that the money is there or will be there?
Well, under the governor's proposal, it will be there. The governor, as you know, has indicated that he intends to go to the voters for a June special election and ask that several existing tax rates in California be extended for a five-year period. And two of those rates, as you mentioned, the current rate on sales tax and the vehicle license fee, would be revenues that would not go to the state's benefit but would be collected by Sacramento but then turn right back around and sent down to local governments to finance the programs that he proposes to be realigned, as the term of art, to be managed by local officials instead of the state. And on the specific issue of the remaining juvenile justice programs, there is money under our proposal for that. Beginning next year, it would be about $78 million. It would grow to about $242 million in 2014. So the effort not only in juvenile justice but in the broader area of realignment is not to take all these programs, send them down to the local governments and say, see ya, tell us how that works out. The government, hand-in-hand with that, is a dedicated and ongoing stream of revenue to finance these programs that would be now managed by local governments in a manner that's somewhat similar to the realignment that former Governor Wilson did in 1991 on mental health, public health, and social service programs, where there was about $2.2 billion worth of program responsibility that was transferred to local governments, but there was also the same amount of revenue that was transferred to local governments in the form of a half-cent increment of sales tax and a vehicle license fee, a portion of that. The governor's proposal is that 1991 realignment writ large, if you will. But also, not only program responsibility goes to the local governments, but an ongoing and dedicated source of revenue does as well.
H.D. Palmer, spokesperson for the California Department of Finance. Thank you so much for joining us, H.D.
Thank you, Michael.
Got seconds left here. Barry Crisberg, you want a quick response from you?
I think what we need to remember is those taxes are already being spent, and they're supporting home health care and child care programs and a range of things already. So again, no new revenue is being generated here. The state might be able to save some from reducing its workforce, but they're going to come up against powerful union interests.
And Dan Mackler?
I think actually what I heard is that there's an additional revenue stream that's going to come. This, I think maybe we need to, this question needs to be resolved, but I think it hinges on new money coming. That was my understanding of the.
Well, thank you both for being here with us this morning. I think this has been most illuminating, and I appreciate your being with us. Barry Crisberg, again, is Research and Policy Director at UC Berkeley Law School. Dan Mackler, Executive Director and co-founder of the Center on Juvenile and Criminal Justice. Another hour forum coming up ahead. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.